You're listening to the Ottawa Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by Referral Mortgages and Blue Panda Realty, with your hosts, Paul Stevenson, David Warren, and Greg Campbell. Let's see what's going on in the world of real estate in our nation's capital.
We're back. We are back in the building. We're back in the building. It is the Ottawa Real Estate Podcast.
Yeah, there's the
there
laugh.
It is.
There's Paul. There's the laugh.
Hello, everybody. Hello. My name is Paul Stevenson. I am one of the proud owners of Referral Mortgages. I'm also a mortgage agent, and I'm here with Greg Campbell. He's a partner and an agent at Blue Panda Realty. We are a duo today. Our third party is not with us, Mr. David Warren. We miss you.
Yeah, that's okay, though. Just the two of us, guy.
Just the two of us.
There we go.
So yeah, how was the weekend, Greg?
It was great.
Let's just get right into it.
I had some showings on Saturday, and then followed that up with the mortgage approvals team Christmas party at the Shaw Center.
Ooh.
You know, Mr. Brock Frost, Jason Ambera, Adil, and the rest of the boys from that team, and it was wild. It was 200 people. It was like things had never changed. Due to COVID, you know, it was like the first regular massive night I'd been to in forever. So that was refreshing. I'll tell you one thing. We did do that. You know, we actually went to the Moscow Tea Room after. The owner was there. He was an old friend of mine, Abbas Mahmoud, which was amazing. I hadn't seen him since the pandemic. So that was cool. He was in town. And what the coolest part about the whole, well, not the coolest part, but one of the coolest parts about the night was that a lot of people at the party came up to me. They were like, "Nice to meet you. I listen to the podcast all the time."
No way.
Yeah. So we had a lot of fans there. It was pretty cool.
Shout out to all those listeners. That sounds great. Yeah. That's a large party, and the Shaw Center is actually a great venue for any sort of large gathering. I've been to different conferences and events there, and it's always a good time. Service is great. Space is awesome.
The food was amazing.
Location is great. You know,
we couldn't believe the food. It was like a buffet style, but it was incredible. And Ryan LaBelle. Ryan LaBelle.
No way.
Yeah.
Was he on the ones and twos?
Overall, man. On the ones and twos. It was amazing. A great night. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So today go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You're still.
No, I'm taking all the time. It doesn't matter. People want us to get into real estate. They want to hear about Paul, then they want real estate. So let's do it.
I'll give you the short and skinny. I had a very relaxing weekend, which is a rarity on my end. The kids were not with me. Jackson was away to tournament, and Madden and Serena were both with their mom. So I had a relaxing weekend to myself. I treated myself to a little spa treatment on a Friday evening, and went to the La Nordique. It was quite quite amazing, magical. It was a nice light snowfall, little winter paradise. And then, rest of the weekend, you know, sat by the fire, watched some sports. It was great. Went for a few nature walks. To the point about TOREP, though, we're still working on our, we're doing our second kind of cohort of the Academy, Ontario Mortgage Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a woman, shout out to Stena, lots of shout outs today. Shout out to Stena. She was, she's one of the registrants for the second cohort. And she was introducing herself again, week two. And she's like, you know, she's like, "I'm a really big fan of TOREP." She's like, "I listen every week. That's actually how I heard about the Academy." So pretty awesome that not only that she listened to the show, but also heard about the Academy through the podcast. So
And another shout out before I forget, Paul, another shout out.
We're going to lose our voices from shouting.
Yeah, I think so. The buyer that I was out with on Saturday, listener to the podcast. So that's it. I was out with, you know, that's it. You got Stena. She's coming on. She's working with the Academy. I got Steven called me up from the show.
Getting you guys couldn't see it if you're just listening, but Greg literally dropped his mic after he said that. Just ding, 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 ding. Mic drop after that. So we got quite the news stories to cover this week. And I think that would be a great place to start. Do you want to talk about what's going on the market first, Greg, or do you want to just hop right into
I'll give a government's quick market plans. Update.
the government's
I'll give a quick market update from what, from what I'm seeing being, you know, feet on the ground. I was involved in a multiple offer scenario on, what night was, I guess it would have been Monday. And, yeah, 2-3 weeks ago, nice homes in Orleans, going for, you know, maybe a little bit over 3 to 5 offers. Now we're back to 20 offers. I lost by a lot, and we just couldn't believe it, because I guess it was building up, because the ones that had been losing were still waiting. And now with less coming out, they're hitting it again. It's madness, to be honest. But I don't know what we're going to be looking at. Usually it settles down a bit, the mid-December through to mid-Jan. But I'm just keeping telling all my buyers, I'm like, just keep your foot on the gas, because if there's deals, this is when they'll happen. Because in January, again, they're projecting, this goes into our conversation, they're projecting a 9.2 increase for 2022. You know, Remax housing market outlook is projecting 9.2%.
Say that 3 times fast.
Increase in 2022. You know, so it's just keep focused, guys. Don't get discouraged. Figure it out, have that plan ready, be ready to pull the trigger.
So it was this exact day, December 6th today recording. It was December 6th last year that I actually bought this house that I'm in right now. So
oh, wow.
We actually had a show, I think the day before on the 5th, it was a Friday. We were still doing live shows. And after the show, I went onto MLS and I was literally just like panning the areas. I remember we had a conversation about like, what are the kind of the hot unknown areas in the city, you know, and you guys are like, love Crystal Beach, love the Crystal Bay area. And I was like, well, just like scanning it. And then this one house popped up and I'm like, oh, what's this? Went and looked at it a couple hours later and pulled the trigger on it, you know, 12 hours after that. So yeah, lots of deals out there. And I know I have certainly been hearing from other real estate agents as well, that there's the supply is lower than it normally would be, especially over the last few months where there's been kind of that flood of properties or perceived flood, at least. It was a lot more than there used to be. But I remember this time last year, we were talking about how, you know, there's only 1,000 listings, or, you know, which is absurd for a city our size, right? To have such a low inventory. Do you know where we're sitting right now, Greg, as far as numbers, or do you have any guess even?
The last time I looked, we were lower than that. I think we were in the mid-8s. Yeah. So, I mean, if that says anything, I could be wrong depending on what happened over the weekend. I didn't look this morning yet, but last week we were in the mid-8s.
Okay. So that's, So for everyone who's out there, I mean, expect competition, right? If you're, I mean, it's a textbook and we're going to get into this actually with the articles, but you know, it's all supply and demand. I mean, that's what the whole market is based on, as far as, you know, how many people need a home, how many homes are there to buy? That's, you know, as basic as you can explain it, but if there's less homes and there's a lot of people buying, I mean, the prices are inevitably going to go up because those people need to buy a home and they're willing to pay more for it because there's not as many homes available. So, you know, we had an article this week, Greg, that I know David put us onto it. Actually, no, you put us onto this one. Sorry, Dave was commenting on it before the show today. But the headline is Liberals plan to go after house flippers, but the CRA is already doing so. So, you know, essentially, long story short, I know we went into real depth when we were, when the election was happening, about what each party's kind of pre-election platform was and what their calls to action were going to be and so on. So, just to reiterate for everyone, the Liberals wanted to introduce kind of their anti-flipping tax, in an effort to reduce speculative demand in the marketplace and to help cool excessive price growth. So they wanted to, basically reassess people that were abusing the PRE, which is the principal residence exemption. So for anyone who is listening, may not know, when you sell your primary residence, so long as it's the home that you're actively living in and it's, you know, your actual primary home, when you sell that home, any capital gains that you make from the equity in the home, you do not currently have to pay tax on that. So, you know, if you buy a home and you it increases, which we've seen a lot of over the last couple of years, it increases by, say, $300,000 or $400,000, and you sell that home, that $300,000 or $400,000 is tax-free revenue for yourself, not revenue, but tax-free money that I, in my opinion, you've earned from owning that home and from the increase in the market and so on. So right now you don't have to pay any tax on that. They are trying to propose this, basically a change to that rule. So if you are to sell your principal residence within 12 months of purchasing or transfer the title, that they're going to treat this as if, you would pay capital gains on that. So essentially what they want to do, I believe, is essentially a 50% tax on that. Correct me if I'm wrong, Greg. I'm pretty sure that I'm very confident.
That's what it is, yeah.
So there would be some exemptions. So they're saying some of the notable exemptions would be sale of vacant land, the sale of a home destroyed, condemned or damaged due to a natural or man-made disaster during the 12-month period, the owner's previous home having been destroyed or condemned, a death, a divorce, a separation. Those are all the same, aren't they? Just kidding. Serious illness, injury, and or change of employment of the beneficial owner during that 12-month period. So there are some, you know, all the things that basically wouldn't be you flipping the home would basically be exempt. But as a whole, Greg, like what are your thoughts on just them kind of bringing this in and just adding kind of an additional tax to the bracket?
Well, you know, I think the main concern with this is that they're saying that home people who are gaining a large sum of money from the sale of their home separates them from someone who's renting a home in terms of income. So it's like, you know, I get the thinking behind it, but then it's like, you know, it's like you're punishing these people for taking the time to go out, get a good job, get their mortgage together, go and buy a house. The market changed in a way that no one knew was going to happen. So you're penalizing people for buying a home during the pandemic, making a good amount of money, and then taxing that. So, you know, meanwhile, everyone's like, oh yeah, I can't believe this happened to me. You know, it's probably a once in a lifetime lottery style thing that's been going on, and it's not going to happen again. Like to this extent, I don't think so anyways, it wouldn't make sense. So it's like, why is the government going to penalize people by creating something new based out of that idea? That's how I see it. Because I mean, you're not going to go buy a house, flip it and profit $250,000. You know what I mean? Unless you're flipping something that, you know, is that can justify that increase. But I mean, that's very rare, right? I find it more of like a pandemic tax for people that did well during the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's especially during a time when they have created a lot of money out of nothing. A lot of money has been created in Canada exactly. Over the last couple of years. And now we got to figure out where we're going to get that money from. And it's clearly from the Canadian citizens and, you know, homeowners by the looks of it. But, you know, what I guess, at least from the people I have talked to about this, and I don't want to say this is my personal opinion, but I do agree with it to a certain extent, is that I feel like the government is trying to, and this has been happening in other areas too, not just in housing, but they're trying to create like an equality of outcome, which is, you know, not typically how things work in a democratic, you know, capital based country. You know, if you're a homeowner, you're taking on a lot of risk at the same time. I mean, it's not like you're just putting a money into a money market fund and watching it grow over 5 years. You know, like this isn't owning a home is not a foolproof safe investment. There are risks involved. There is possibility for markets to dip, right? There's no guarantee that your house is going to double in value exactly. In 10 years. This is still a risk, and it historically has been a good investment. But as we've seen over the last couple of years, the pandemic could have crushed the real estate market. It didn't, thank God, but it could have, right? I mean, I know when the pandemic first hit, we were concerned, well, if people can't do open houses, are people going to want to buy homes? Is this going to crush the whole market for the next year? Like we had no idea, right? And these things can happen out of nowhere, as we've seen. If there's ever been an example of that, we've seen that over the last couple of years. Now, luckily, it forced an uptick in values and in the market. So for homeowners, it was a benefit, but it could have easily gone the other way, right? And then Are they going to then bail out all these homeowners and give them tax breaks for the Hell losses no. on their homes?
Hell no.
So why, if we're going to take on the risk and we're going to pay the price if it goes down, why should we be penalized for selling the home if things go in the right, in a good direction, you know? So I guess that's what I was saying about the equality of outcome. Like if you're taking on that risk, there should not be that equality of outcome in my opinion. And again, the people I had talked to know, maybe an echo chamber. So I am very open to debate here and would love to hear the other side of the story, but I just think that it's unfair, right? To the people that are taking that risk and investing their own money into these properties. They should, in my opinion, they're taking on that risk and they shouldn't be penalized if they do well with that investment.
You know, and you don't know the story, right? Like, and that's the thing. Well, someone was talking about, you know, there should be, you know, reasons like, or tiers to what they're even talking about, even if they try to do that, because you don't know the situation. Like, imagine this, you're a buyer. It's your first home. Let's say it's your first, you've been renting your whole life and saving for a home. Let's say some of these buyers are in their 50s. Okay. You've been waiting forever. And now you just happen to buy a house right before the pandemic starts and you make $100,000 and you want to sell your house to do something else, or you want to do something with it, the money, pay back debt, help out your family that also hasn't been able to do it. And you're going to get taxed on that. It's like, how do they separate what's like, who's right and who's wrong, like to be taxed? Because they can't do this. It's like they were saying, it's political suicide, basically. Who's going to go for this? Like, it'll be attacked. I don't think it's possible for them to do this.
Now it's they're saying the 12 months, which I think is the argument they're going to really harp. It's like, well, you know, listen, if you're selling your home in the first 12 months, if there's a good reason, we won't penalize you. So it's kind of like, they're going to ease this rule in by just making it seem very plausible and very reasonable. Unless you're flipping a home, you know, if you're not doing anything wrong, why do you care if we watch and listen to you all the time? You know, it's one of those types of things, right? So I feel like it's going to kind of easily like kind of get swept in with the 12 month kind of rule. And then I could see that becoming, well, we already have it for the 12 months. So we're just going to tax all capital gains now when you sell your home. Right. So they're going to start with the 12 months. And then I could see it easily kind of extending into anytime you sell your home, you're now going to get dinged. Right. So there was a story actually in this article that was very interesting. So it was from a woman who in Markham, she signed an agreement with a builder to buy a pre-construction townhome back in 2007. So this is obviously quite some time ago. She ended up moving into the home in 2011, May of 2011. So we're talking 4 years after she signed the agreement. She ended up selling the home in June of 2012 for a very legitimate reason. So basically signed the agreement in 2007. 2010, she was single. She met a partner. They ended up dating for a couple years. She moved in May and said, you know what, we're still too early in this relationship, so we're not going to move in together or, you know, buy this home together, which makes complete sense. June of 2012, they decide to move to the US and she decided to list and sell her home. So she's been in this home for over a year now. She originally bought the home almost 4.5 years ago, almost 5 years when she ended up selling it. And the in 2015, CRA basically reassessed her, audited and reassessed her 3 years after she sold the home. Reassessed her and said that she had unreported business income arising from the disposition of the townhome. So they're basically saying that she had business income, essentially saying that she bought this home as an investment, as for the sole purpose of flipping it and getting that equity that she made off of the home. So long story short, the net proceeds after the sales commissions and everything was about $43,000 that she made from the home. The CRA assessed a tax of $22,000 that she owed them. So over half
of what she paid,
over half of what her proceeds were, they taxed her $22,000. Yeah. So, you know, if you sell your home,
the judge threw it out though, that case.
Well, no. So that one she paid. That one she did pay in.
Oh, okay. Sorry. You're getting to some story.
Yeah, I'll get to it. So she ended up paying that full $22,000 from the US in full without going to court or disputing it in any way, which just, again, take that into consideration. She sold a home after buying it for almost 5 years, took all that risk of a new build, yada, yada. This isn't, you know, the last 2 years. This is like a general normal housing market. She made $43,000 total over a 5-year time frame and had to pay the government $22,000 of that. Period. I mean, does there even need to be an explanation? That's wild. So then anyway, so she paid it, thought it was swept under the rug. Turns out that in June 2018, the CRA deemed her to be a builder now. So forget this one home that she purchased. They then deemed her to be a builder under the Excise Tax Act and hit her with an additional $33,650 of HST and a $20,000 of arrears interest. Oh, and a $2,200 non-filer penalty. So basically another $55,000 in tax off this one property.
And that's the one they threw out.
Yeah. So she ended up, she did end up going to court for basically. And they basically, you know, CRA countered her saying that, you know, the motive at the onset was to acquire the property to sell for a profit. And that given the short holding period and because of the taxpayer barely lived in the property. Well, she lived there for a year and sold it because she moved to the state. So anyways, long story short, judge reviewed it, said 3 years later, she met a boyfriend. They became engaged. They left the country together. They got married. And as far as circumstances go, you know, he threw it out saying it makes complete sense, which thank God we have some reason in this country. And he was able to throw it out. So she, I believe the second portion, that $55,000, she did not have to pay, but she certainly didn't recoup the $22,000 that she paid up front. My understanding.
And who paid her legal fees? Not CRA.
Right.
You can be guaranteed of that. Insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty wild. So I'm very interested. Anyone's listening and you know, have heard of this story or have thoughts on the story, certainly comment on them below. Or if you're listening to this, you know, feel free to reach out to us on Facebook or make a comment. Well, we can certainly follow up on this story next week or the week after. Cause I know Dave was disappointed he had to miss this one. Cause I know he has a lot of opinions on these sorts of things as well. The other article we had kind of getting in the headlines today, it's a headline day, you know. The other one we had was a CTV News article where it said Canada not in midst of housing bubble, the former housing and mortgage head states. So the former CEO of the CMHC, his name is Evan Seidel, and he basically says that he does not believe that we're in a bubble. He actually says, I really don't think we're in a bubble. This is a quote, if demand is going up and supply is not, prices will go up. That's not a bubble. So it's a question of what the future brings and whether there will be a supply and demand coming back into balance. And that's a crystal ball question. So one really interesting comment, I'll pass it off to you after this, Greg. Pierre Poilievre, who is an MP, who I'm sure some people have heard about if you've been following any of the pandemic information in Parliament. Not only are Canadians spending more when they buy a house, now they have to pay more on their taxes for the failed programs that this minister and government put into place to inflate the housing bubble to begin with, which I thought was a very interesting comment. Greg, what do you think about just this whole thing? Just basically, again, everyone, you know, some people saying that we're in a bubble and people thinking that we just can't sustain this price mark where we are currently.
Well, it's interesting because you would assume that we're in a bubble because of the prices, due to the pricing and where it's been going over the last few years. But if you look at the numbers, you look at what the Liberals, you know, plan to do. You know, they plan to build 100,000 new homes in major cities by 2025. And there's 300,000 new immigrants coming to Canada every single year. So that's, what are we, 2021? So we're 2022. So in 3 years,
almost,
that's 900,000 new immigrants. They plan to build 100,000 homes. Like, so bottom line here is to keep up with this, we need builders, like more builders in the private sector, just going crazy. And
yes,
you know, for them to even get started, have permits, go through the process and have that many done. Like, I mean, that needed to have been planned years ago, basically. So I'm not sure what we're going to be able to do. And of course, as we know, if they raise the interest rates, then the economy can collapse. But due to the stress test, it's a little bit more realistic for a lot of people just to maintain with what they have. I don't know. I just don't know. And again, the Liberals, 100,000 new homes in major cities, 2025, like, are they even going to get started on that by then? I don't know. Mm-hmm. New election comes up. Nothing's been done. They did. Maybe they'll do 10. Like, let's be realistic. Maybe they will do 25,000 of that. Yeah, I don't think they're going to do 100,000. So then the private sector has to sustain the whole thing. More people getting taxed. Like, I don't know. There's so many factors here. It's hard to predict or you know, what's going to happen. Obviously we know that, but I don't know. What do you think about all this?
Well, there's a couple things, I think. So first of all, I think that I completely agree with you that there needs to be private sector support, because ultimately, you know, someone said it in the article, but we're talking literally about trillions of dollars in housing activity. And if it's a supply issue, like not only is there a ridiculous amount of red tape that you have to go through just to even build a home, right? Like it takes, let's just say even 6 months and tens of thousands of dollars to just break ground on a new project. Right. And then on top of that, you're talking, it's just going to be the government that is basically planning to build these homes. They're not offshooting any of that to the private sector. I mean, maybe this is a cliche, but I mean, things tend not to move so quickly within the government. You know, everyone's kind of, I know there's a lot of people that work very hard, but when you're talking about a massive project like this, where we need to have houses built yesterday, ago, 2 years ago, we need all hands on deck, right? We need to be having as many, anyone who can literally build a home needs to be shovels in the ground building so that we can match this supply issue. And like you said, Greg, I mean, 100,000 homes, how quickly is that going to get done? Even if they said today, you know, all builders, you can go ahead and, you know, we're going to give you plots of land to start building homes. I mean, 100,000 homes doesn't happen overnight. That takes time to build. And just the, you know, the bureaucracy of trying to get the ground broken on those 100,000 homes, I'm sure is going to be a nightmare for the next year to year and a half. And like you said, we're going to be 2024 and, you know, there'll be, like you said, even generously a quarter of those homes built. And then by then, like we said, you know, if home prices are going up 9% in 2022, it's probably going to be something quite similar in 2023. If there's a supply issue, maybe even more. So, I mean, the supply issue is literally the core of the issue. And if we're not addressing that seriously with any like true action, which I think we both agree, well, we know we both agree, there needs to be private sector activity and they need to be helping with this demand to get the homes to where they need to be. If they want to have 100,000 homes in the next 3 years, you're going to need some hands on deck for that.
And it's not, I mean, this isn't a, you know, it's not a good thing overall, you know, with the prices being where they are for the general consumer who's working towards home ownership. But like we always say, you just got to put a plan in place and work towards it, you know, or don't. It's as simple as that. And there's a lot of tools that you can use to make it happen. You just got to make sure that you're talking to the right people and who can, you know, lead you in the right direction.
Totally. And I think, you know, some of the stuff that they did propose, I don't want to suggest that the, you know, they're kind of pre-election platform was all bad. I mean, I think like we were talking about equality of outcome. I think equality of opportunity is really where the focus should be. And I think that's, you know, the first time buyer savings accounts, more incentive, like actual true incentives that are going to help people buy homes, I think would be great. Taxing, like all these things that are kind of on the back end, like kind of rear loaded taxes, I think are ridiculous. Like you need to be helping people get into homes, not penalizing people that are already in them. You know, that's my opinion. I needed debate, Seidel says, to close out this article. He said, Seidel says it's time Canadians have the debate on whether to implement capital gains tax on primary residences, which he says help minimize the housing inequality gap. One of the things that's really driving people apart in terms of inequality in our country is the amount of money people are making off houses who own them versus the amount of money people aren't making on their homes that rent them. That's what you were saying earlier. Why don't we tax gains on houses, or why don't we tax gains on houses, but we tax the gains on other investments? It's a serious non-progressive situation in our tax code. He acknowledged that it's an idea not in the minds of policymakers, as it would lead to political suicide. Politicians just aren't allowed to have this conversation because the opposition, and it's any color, will skewer them for it. And so we don't have the debate we have to have. I mean, in my opinion, again, this is solely my opinion. I think anytime you're, again, going back to the risk reward, if you are taking your own hard-earned money and investing it into anything, whether it be the stock market, a mutual fund, real estate, a business, like whatever you're investing your money into, I don't think there's any reason to have, you know, to be penalized for your success in that regard. The same way that if you lose money on these investments, nobody's coming to save your boat. You know, nobody's coming out to throw you a life jacket and say, hey, Paul, you lost 20 grand on that investment. Let us help you out with that and get you back on your feet. No. So if I'm taking that risk and I do well on it, why should I be basically penalized, you know, $20,000, $30,000 for the risk and the reward that I earned, really. So like I said, I think there's a lot to be said for opportunity, equality of opportunity, give people the opportunity to buy a house if they want to and create programs that allow people to buy a house if they want to. But if you're able to buy a home, in my opinion, or any sort of investment, if you're reinvesting your money wisely and you do well, then you shouldn't be penalized for that. That's maybe I'm too old school, but you know, I think there's lots of things we pay tax on every single thing we buy, every single thing we earn, on our property tax. We pay tax everywhere. Like literally every single day you go out in the world, you're paying tax every single time you spend or earn money. So the things that you're risking your money investing into should be yours to risk and yours to earn.
I agree. Yeah. And there should be more support for people that actually really need it. You know, I know there's lots of plans in place. I can't talk about it too much, but it's, you know, there's a lot of people in need and there needs to be platforms that our country puts together for that based on what we already have. Because the extra money that they'd be getting from these people that do well, they're just trying to pay back for the money that they've been spending on the pandemic for everyone. And a lot of people getting that money are able to work and they're not even working. So there's a big mixed bag of things happening here.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I don't want to sound like a capitalist here. I mean, I very much agree that there are a lot of people that need assistance right now. And certainly, you know, our taxes should help to pay that, but that's also a mismanagement of our tax dollars, right? I mean, this isn't like a matter of us siphoning all this money in shoeboxes under our bed and not sharing it with people. I mean, we are, like we were talking about before, like just in home insurance, you know, there was, I think, $5 billion paid in home insurance and the default rate in Canada is a fraction of 1%, you know? So like, where is that $5 billion going? Why don't we reallocate that to something that actually stimulates the market, helps build homes and puts more people indoors, right? Like it's not, this isn't a matter of, we need to tax more people. No, let's manage our money better. Let's actually manage the government the way it should be managed and facilitate better programs that are actually going to help people get into doors. That's what should
100%, happen. 100%. And that's the thing. It's like, even if they tried to implement this capital gains tax on, you know, home flipping or whatever, you know, there would need to be, they would have to show proof of where that money was going. Cause in my mind, it would have to go directly back into the housing industry in this country to either help those in need to bridge that gap, the equality gap, or back toward, you know, building more homes, you know, but
yeah, building more homes. That's where
you will never, we'll never know. It would never be, none of that would be public, you know, cause we all know where it goes. Oops.
Private jets.
Mood boost.
Mood boost. Yeah. Oh, I'm getting heated on a Monday. I got to slide into the mood boost here. All right. I got five today. They're quite good. I'm very happy with them. Number one, I was pretty happy actually with Mike last week. Not only did he guess
the answer,
but he got it right. So number one, why do bees stay in their hives during the winter? Swarm. Number two, just so everyone is clear, I'm going to put my glasses on.
Yeah, like that one.
Number three, what happens when a commander walks into a bar? He orders everyone around.
Good.
Number four. I got two more. Slinging today. Number four. Never buy flowers from a monk because only you can prevent florist friars.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And last,
florist friars.
Florist friars.
Yeah, florist fire friars, yeah.
Number five. Last but not least. Dad, are we pyromaniacs? Yes, we are, son. We are some
pretty good.
So those, believe it or not, those are courtesy of my aunt. So I got the whole family now shooting me mood boosts. Everyone's like, I got some good ones. So Auntie Mary is leading the pack. Those are fire. So I got another, yeah. I got at least another 10 in the bank, ready to rock.
That's great.
Yeah,
I love it.
Before we go, quick shout out to North Brew. I miss them on the intro, but anyone who's listening, if you're a coffee drinker, it's Christmas time. Go over to North Brew, buy some coffee. You get 20% off by using the promo code podcast, and 20% of all of the proceeds of their sales go to Greg. Remind me.
Social housing programs.
Thank you. Social housing programs. So, I mean, very topical for the show. So if anyone's listening, you're pissed off with what's happening right now with the lack of housing, go buy some coffee and, 20% of that's going to go back to helping those in need. Great time of year to do that. Also, shout out to Stephen Hopkins, our producer,
just a wizard
behind the camera. And I know he was in here a couple of weeks ago. So if anyone was watching, he gave us a breakdown of his home buying experience, and it was very insightful. Very happy to have him here. And David, we miss you today.
We do.
Greg, any closing remarks?
Just so that everyone knows, I guess we have two more episodes left for the year, right? Are we doing the 20th?
Mm-hmm.
We're doing the 20th, right? And then we're back on the 10th. All right, cool.
Yeah. And actually, really worthwhile mentioning, realtors and people listening, the bulk of law offices are closed from the 24th to the 4th of January. So schedule your closings no later than the 22nd and no earlier than the 6th or 7th, because the scheduling from the 4th to 5th is going to be a disaster. And if you're closing are those days already, really like all banks, law clerks, are only going to be back in the office on the 4th. And if you're signing and lawyer papers are not, my God, coffee's going down the wrong way. If you're signing and your lawyer papers are not done by the 23rd of December, realistically, you're not closing on the 4th, and the 5th is going to be very challenging. So that whole week is going to be a bit of a disaster. So just be very cognizant of that. Basically the whole market shuts down for that kind of 10-day period, and just be ready for that. And, don't get caught.
Be ready.
Don't get caught early in the new year, because it'll be quite disappointing. Thank you as well to all our listeners. If you're still listening after this ramble, be sure to like, subscribe, share this, and we'll see you next week. We'll be back. Gregory, thank you as always. Stephen, it's a pleasure.
The Ottawa Real Estate Podcast is brought to you by Referral Mortgages, Blue Panda Realty, and Stephen Hopkins Video. Thanks for tuning in, and please remember to like, comment, share, and most importantly, subscribe. We'd love to hear from you.